Ready to level up your day? Then join me and my friends at LoneStarCasino.com. That's L-O-N-E-S-T-A-R Casino, where you can experience the thrill of Las Vegas, no matter where you are. LoneStarCasino.com is an absolutely free-to-play social casino with thousands of games, daily bonuses, free spins, and jackpots that pop like fireworks. Hit pause on life and hit play on LoneStarCasino.com.
Lone Star Casino is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit LoneStarCasino.com for more details.
Sign up today for an incredible welcome bonus. Play bold. Win big.
This week on the Breakup Breakdown.
When she left, I knew I had 2 days to comb through the house to see if I could find any evidence of anything else going on. I had been paying attention to everything in the house for a while, and we had some bedroom accessories, if you will. And I figured out that those bedroom accessories were no longer in the house when she went away with the gun. This was no longer just a casual work relationship. It was no longer just an emotional support person. This was a full-on affair.
No, your wife brought those sex toys to her company camping trip because they're used to scare bears away. Definitely not because you think she's having an affair with her coworker. Welcome to Season 8, Episode 15 of The Breakup Breakdown. I'm your host and lead relationship PI, Abby Murphy, and this week our guest says he suspected his wife of having an affair after noticing one change to her nighttime routine. If you're new here, this is the podcast that gets to the bottom of those messy breakup stories you want to know more about. People will submit stories in the submission form that's in the episode description. So it can be something you've seen on TikTok. You can submit a friend, your own story, or even if you think someone's just like soft launching their breakup on Instagram and you want to ask them about it, I don't mind sliding into the DMs and trying to get some details if they're open to it, of course. Doesn't matter where the story comes from. We just want to hear what happened and get some good lessons along the way. And as always, if you want to jump to a certain part of the interview, timestamps are in the episode description. Hey, Heartbreakers, welcome back to another episode of The Breakup Breakdown. This week, we've got an interview from a man, which if you're a longtime listener to this podcast, you know is so rare. We never get guys on the podcast. Not for lack of trying, though. But he says he noticed his wife change one thing that she did at bedtime that made him suspect that she was cheating on him with a certain coworker. But before we get into that, every week we give a shout out to a different domestic violence organization to raise more awareness. And this week we are shouting out the YWCA in Cincinnati, Ohio. Since the 70s, the YWCA of Greater Cincinnati has provided services to victims of intimate partner violence and their children in the Greater Cincinnati area. You can find more details on the organization in the episode description. Okay, so I don't really even know if I can call this week a submission because I stumbled across this story all last week because this new podcast that I've been doing with some of my coworkers called The Personality Hires, we did this week-long tour, which the boys thought was a terrible idea because they don't know how to pace themselves, but we all work at this big radio show together, or we did, and it's our first week off of the show because it's come to an end, and I was like, we need to do something together, meet people out in the wild who listen to our show, and you know, just have a good time. So anyway, it's the first night of our quote-unquote poor tour, and we're at this bar/restaurant, and I'm mingling with some of the people who listen to our podcast, and I'm talking to this guy, and he's like, listen, and I hear this a lot, honestly, when I'm out with people who listen to this podcast or the show that I used to work on, they're like, you are gonna die when you hear my breakup story. And I'm literally always like, bring it. I've been doing this for 4 years. I am dying to hear it, whatever it is. So I guess it's a submission in that way, but not from the submission form that I always talk about in the episode description. But he was like, yeah, I was married to this woman that I met at church. He was like, I used to run this singles group at church, and that's how we got together. We dated, everything seemed fine, we got married, and they're living like a very basic suburban dream, you know? So they get married, they start having some issues, and he told me that after they had taken a pause on therapy, he started suspecting that his wife was having an affair with a coworker that he had said they had invited over to dinner one night. He's like, I literally had this man in my house, and all of a sudden I started getting this weird feeling that maybe something was happening. So of course he did some investigating. He started noticing something weird that she was doing at night, and I believe there's two pieces of evidence that really tipped him off to actually confront her. So let's get into it, find out what those two things were when we break down this week's breakup.
I was actually leading a singles group at a church. A young singles, so 25 to 40-ish was kind of the main group we were in. Had a pretty good following of people that were coming in. You know, we had a group of 20, 25 people. We were having a good time, did a lot of events together, and then cute girl showed up. Obviously, myself as this leader, I couldn't just put myself go towards her because I'm trying to facilitate a safe environment for singles. And you know, I try to always tell people you don't join a singles group with the purpose of meeting somebody. If you do, that's great. That's not the goal. You're there for, may not have a large group of friends to hang out with all the time. You want to do something with, you want to kind of hang out. As I did with anybody else who showed up, I would invite them to the next whatever event we were doing that was not on our weekly church meetings. So we would do about every 6 weeks, we'd do a dinner or some gathering for some holiday. So we were close to Thanksgiving. So we were going to do like a Friendsgiving at my house. So obviously I invited her to that. And she came to that as well. We had a great time with there. And we had a couple movies we went to in December. And then we did a Christmas party. And I could kind of tell that she was showing interest in me, which is great, you know, and some other people that were already in couples in the group, they kind of approached me like, hey, she's interested in you. I'm like, well, that's new. That's usually not how it goes for me. So I'll take anything that someone says, hey, they're interested in me. I'll do that. So we did a big New Year's Eve party, which was fantastic. And then she called me 3 days later and asked me if I wanted to go on a hike. Said, I don't have anything to do for the next 3 days because I was off work for 2 weeks. Kind of, you know, that was the first kind of date, you could say. And that kind of started a pretty much daily communication between the two of us for during the week. And then during the weekends, you know, we'd try and meet up and hang out and did kind of the standard courtship kind of level. Over time, obviously, we kept dating. And that summer, I started my MBA. By that point, we were pretty serious and we were spending a lot of time together. We were meeting up 3 or 4 nights a week, trying to make weekends as much as we could. About 8 months into it, and this is where I started to kind of feel like, okay, this is really serious, is we were at my house hanging out, watching TV. And then she kind of got my attention like, hey, can we talk about something serious? And I was like, well, this is going to go one of two ways. It's either going to be endearing or it's going to be like, hey, I've been dating someone on the side and, you know, I'm picking them. You know, I really don't know what it was. And she started breaking down and crying. And I was like, well, this is like, what are we doing? Like, what's going on? And she kind of revealed something that she had been holding on to because she was afraid that it was going to drive me away from her. And it was that she had severe anxiety and severe ADHD and had struggled with it her entire life and had been bullied through schools and, you know, all the ramifications of that. And she was afraid that because of that, I was going to reject her, which is why she kind of held it back. And obviously that was not who I am. Like, I'm going to work with you where you're at. That's because I care for you, because I wouldn't be with you at this point if I didn't care for you. So that was kind of like the first, hey, this is a serious kind of building relationship into what could be something bigger. So at that point, we started planning what could we do together, kind of test the next levels of the relationship. And for me, that's travel. I love to travel. I love to see places. Travel has a lot of stress in a lot of different ways that you don't see in the day-to-day routine. And I was like, well, it's a good way to test is to go on and do a 4 or 5 day trip somewhere where you're moving, you're staying active, and see how the stresses play in the relationship, because that's going to be a reveal character of how are we going to work together when we're confined in a hotel room for 5 days, and, you know, how's this going to go? So we went down to, where did we go? Down close to Naples, spent 5 days down there. Beautiful place. Basically, when we went, did one more trip in December to Fort Lauderdale, and I proposed at sunrise. That was kind of we met 3 years later, we're engaged. Let's start planning the fun stuff.
Yeah. So kind of the typical, you know, you meet, date for a couple of years, get engaged, and then you're married. So it sounds kind of like, you know, like your typical relationship and everything seems like it's going pretty well. But is there a point in the relationship where you go, I think maybe this isn't the forever I thought it was going to be?
I started to see some red flags and question marks at our wedding. We did a destination wedding. This will be an entire hour-long episode of how big of a cluster that experience was of everything that could go wrong, went wrong from this time we landed to the time we were done with our entire wedding / honeymoon. Because we booked 10 days in the same all-inclusive resort. Family came in for the first 3 days, did the wedding party and all that, and then they left and we had, you know, 7 days of quote unquote honeymoon at the resort. Basically, everything went so wrong that I started to see that she couldn't just let it go and, you know, try and have a good time with the time we were there. It was, hey, we're married. Everything, you know, it came out all right. It ended up being just fine. But just the frustration of how things had gone just kind of threw her to a point where she just couldn't get past it.
Give me an example of one of the things that went wrong that sent her into a state of feeling discontent about the week.
So when we arrived, we were supposed to do like a walkthrough of where we were going to do everything. And we already scheduled that with the coordinator that we'd been dealing with on the phone. And basically none of that had actually been communicated to the resort. And so we were like, well, when are we supposed to do all this stuff? And they're like, oh, tomorrow at 8 a.m. And it's like, well, that's the last thing you want to do on the first full day you have there is to have to be up early to go meet with somebody at 8 a.m. when you thought you were doing it 3 hours after you arrived, just to get it off the way. Like, okay, we checked that box. We can relax. Everything's good. Now it's like, well, if that's not right, what else is not right? I'll give you one other is that in the garden we were supposed to have our reception in, they were putting a new building on top of. They had been building that for 8 months and had never told us that, hey, this garden that you had chosen for your reception area no longer exists.
So you need a new place to have your entire reception.
Which the only place they had available was in the dead center resort where everyone's balcony overlooked you while you're trying to have a wedding reception with your family and close friends.
Oh, God. So now, to be fair, I don't know this woman, and I'm sure we're going to hear more about this entire relationship. But like, you know what? If this is my wedding day, I'm going to be pretty pissed about that, too.
I mean, we were both pissed. But, you know, 4 days later, everything, you know, it worked out being great. Everybody who was still in the resort who was able to see it, they all complimented how everything nice it looked and how everything went. You know, we had a good time at the wedding itself. Everything turned out fine. There was no like, hey, let's just try and relax and let's come together and let's be together and enjoy the time we're here and try and move past. We can't control what we can't control. And at a certain point, it's like, there's nothing I can say or do that's going to make that be fixed. And there's nothing anyone else can say or do that's going to make that be fixed. Let's try and enjoy the moment we're here. We had excursions planned and we still did those, but it kind of took away from some of that. It was like this constant, well, what if, and this back end of other things. So it kind of, that was my first kind of like red flag. I'm like, okay, well, that's, I didn't see that before. And we've been through a lot of stuff. She got a lot of family issues and I won't get into all of it, but she's got a lot of childhood trauma. Her parents were the type that really never should have had kids, but had two and didn't really know how to handle them. And they both went through multiple divorces and it was an ugly picture. So that was kind of the first red flag. And then once we came back, there was like this pretty massive shift of the expectations around the house to where before we worked really well together about cleaning the house and doing things together and cooperating. And then it became a, well, now we're married. I want to be out and doing something every weekend and, you know, all the wedding planning is done. So what are we going to do next? And it was this constant, you know, almost pestering to be, we've got to be out doing something somewhere on every Saturday of every weekend. And as a professional adult, when you work 5 days a week and you come home and you're not able to get as much done during the week do you want to, so your weekends are kind of your catch-up time. And if you're being pushed to where everything, you're having to do that every weekend, it's like, it's not realistic to be gone and doing something active every Saturday, every year of the year. I mean, it's like, I get that, you know, hey, we're going to do stuff. It's going to be fun. But at some point, we just got to pick a Saturday and just, hey, we're going to be around the house trying to get stuff caught up. And it started to really wear on me. You know, the first year and a half, it wasn't that bad. But after that, I started to notice more and more like signs of like, man, I'm exhausted. I'm mentally exhausted. I'm physically exhausted. I don't get peace. And that's, you know, a guy wants peace when he comes home. That's what he craves. You know, the last thing he wants is something that's a stressor at his house. He's got a, most guys carry a lot of stress at work because we don't have a lot of people we can talk to about stress at home. So our peace is at home as intended to be. And if the home environment becomes stressful because there's nothing you can do to satisfy what's going on, it starts to wear you down to a point where you start to really struggle on what you can do.
It kind of sounds like there was this big shift. I mean, literally from the second you guys got married. Why do you think that is?
I honestly don't know. I tried to try and figure it out. About 2 years in, everything was reaching a point where it's like, okay, we can't resolve this on our own. So we started to talk to different counselors, and as great as the, you know, a counselor, a marriage counselor can be, sometimes I wish they would just flat out say what they're thinking. A lot of them I found have, you know, they have a self-interest of maintaining you as clients. I found that the first one we kind of talked to, she really just didn't want to even get into what was going on. Like she would meet with us individually and then us together. And when we met together, it was like we had never talked to her individually. And it was just got to this point where it's like, well, we're not getting anywhere. So 6 months later, we switched to another one. And we lasted with about 9 months with her, and all I could feel was things were getting worse and worse. Nothing was improving. And there were times where I'm going like, I know I would be sitting in that room going, I've talked with this person and I've told her these issues and she's told me her opinion. And now she's not voicing that opinion to my spouse. She as a therapist is not telling my spouse what she's told me. And I know I can tell my spouse that till I'm blue in the face, but that's not going to change how my spouse is if there's not a third person that we're going to see that's going to step in and do that.
Yeah. And then it kind of makes you look like maybe not a liar, but if you're having this relationship with this couple's therapist and then she's almost like switching up and becoming a totally different person, then it's like, how are we supposed to resolve anything if I feel like I have two different therapists giving me two different solutions or reacting to a problem in a different way?
Exactly. And that became very frustrating. And as you know, couples therapists aren't cheap, especially when you're seeing them every week for via yourself or as a couple. You're talking hundreds and hundreds of dollars a month. So after basically 14 months with two therapists, we decided we're going to try one more. And
Ready to level up your day? Then join me and my friends at LoneStarCasino.com. That's LoneStar Casino, where you can experience the thrill of Las Vegas, no matter where you are. LoneStarCasino.com is an absolutely free-to-play social casino with thousands of games, daily bonuses, free spins, and jackpots that pop like fireworks. Hit pause on life and hit play on LoneStarCasino.com.
Lone Star Casino is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit LoneStarCasino.com for more details.
Sign up today for an incredible welcome bonus. Play bold. Win big.
This was actually a guy, and I actually felt like we were going to start to make progress. He only wanted to meet with us as a couple so that way things could be said in person, which I was like, I like that. I like that approach to where we can have more one-on-one conversation, couples conversations with him in the room to kind of guide and hold things up. And I felt like we were just starting to get where he was fully understanding some of the issues and the history and the trauma that we both had had in our lives and how that was playing into our relationship and, start to work towards where we can gain a step forward and start making progress and things. And that was about the time that my ex decided to say she wanted to take a pause on counseling. I understood it because for her, emotions were very tight. And so she was getting to a point where she was just overwhelmed and needed a break. And I'm like, that's fine. I mean, as long as what we have right now doesn't proceed to get worse, we could take a. I was okay with it at the time. Now, through this whole relationship, my ex struggled to find work. And over time, that became worse and worse. She did about a year before we split. It's a great job. I think she's still there today. Had really good benefits. She struggled with her boss, and there were some of those issues where her boss was in a different state. She's working here, so a little bit different of remote. She had an office to go to, but her direct superior was not in that office. So it's, a little bit different relationship from what she was used to, which is fine. But she started to make a couple friends in the office, which I was thrilled for. I'm like, great, you have somebody to talk to at work. You have someone to voice your complaints about work. Because, a lot of people don't really want you to bring work home, because that's just going to add more stresses to the relationship. So I was kind of like, great, you have somebody to talk to. We're still going through counseling all through this whole process. And, there's a lot of stressors in our relationship, which did not help us at all. And then I started to notice some changes in patterns. Shortly after we started counseling, we ended up started to sleeping in different bedrooms. Her initial complaint, which I understood, was I snore. I have sleep apnea. So I went and got sleep tests, got my CPAP machine. Love it. Sleep so much better with it. Said, okay, well, I've solved that problem. Why don't we come back to the same bedroom? And then it became, well, you don't go to bed when I want to. And I'm like, okay, if you went to bed at an hour that would be okay with me, I would be acceptable of that. But she wanted to go to bed at 7:30 or 8 o'clock every night, which I understand if you have a job you have to be up really early for, but she has to be at work till 9. And I'm going, I don't usually get home sometimes until 6:30 or 7. So you want me to go to bed 30 minutes to an hour after I get home? I'm going, that doesn't work. I've got to. Like, I've there's that doesn't physically work for me. I need time to just kind of reset from the day, eat dinner, relax a little bit before I'll be ready to go to bed. So we ended up where she was sleeping in a different bedroom. That's fine. But I started to notice some patterns of that were pretty consistent in how she operated. And when she went to bed is that she had a cat when she came into a relationship. So she would leave the door cracked because otherwise the cat would either beg to get in or out, which is fine. And I started to notice that she would start to close the door at night, which kind of threw me off for a loop. I'm like, well, that's different. What is she doing that for? And then at Easter comes around. And she asked me if she could invite a coworker who was single and didn't have anywhere to go to come over for Easter dinner. I said, that's fine. We'll come up with a menu and do a nice Easter dinner, and that's fine. So she invites her coworker over, and he's a nice enough guy. We have a good conversation and play a few games after dinner, and he goes home, and we do our thing and clean up the house and go to bed. So I started to notice some patterns changing, and I was like, well, there's something going on. So I started to kind of be really diligent on paying attention to everything that was in the house, what was being done, patterns, trying to make sure I was checking things a lot more often. And I ended up stumbling upon her iPad. where through Facebook, you were able to do video calls through Facebook Messenger, and it logged them in a way that you couldn't really delete them unless you knew where to go to get the log. And since she went to bed at 8 o'clock at night, I had a couple hours every night to kind of play with it and try and figure out where that was going on. And I stumbled upon the log, and it turns out she had been chatting with this guy every night for about 3 weeks straight for 2 to 3 hours. Well past the time that she normally would go to bed, well past the time that she would normally stay up with me. That really hurt me because it was like, why are you willing to stay up for this guy, but not your husband? What's the deal? You know, we've struggled with that from the early part in our marriage, and now you won't stay up for your husband, but you will a guy you're work with. Like, what's going on? And so I really really put me on edge of there's definitely something not right in the relationship going on. You know, definitely heading in the exact wrong. That really put me on edge to try and really, really dig in and try to search for issues. And about a month, she and the guy friend at work, or some camping trip that a lot of people at work went and did every year. And so she was invited to go. I'm like, that's great. Go have fun. Enjoy the time. In the back of my mind, I'm also going, I'm going to verify everything while you're gone to try and see if I can figure out if anything else is going on in this process. And so when she left, I knew I had 2 days to comb through the house to see if I can find any evidence of anything else going on. And I wasn't there when she packed, but I had been paying attention to everything in the house for a while. And early in our marriage, we had a fairly healthy, intimate life, and we had some bedroom accessories, if you will. And I figured out that those bedroom accessories were no longer in the house when she went away with the guy for the weekend. And that pretty much confirmed everything I needed to know about what was going on, is that this was no longer just a casual work relationship. It was no longer just a emotional support person. This was a full-on affair.
What was your knee-jerk reaction when it dawned on you that this was more than likely a physical relationship?
I think I sat on the couch for about 4 hours and stared into the space. It crushed me. Absolutely crushed me. There's not many people in this world that I care about as much as I cared about her, and she couldn't see it. And we talked about if that had ever happened in a relationship, what my views were on it. And I have no problem if you are done in the relationship. Just be honest. Say you're done. Don't go behind my back. Don't do that, because that's not fair to the person you've been with for 8 years. It's not how you should end a relationship that way, because we've talked about it. You know, that is the trigger for the end. There's not a lot of coming back from that for me, because that's a hard line, because I would never do that to you or anybody else that I was with. So I expect that of you. I don't have a lot of expectations from people I really care about, but that's a hard line for me, especially when I know that for her to get there, it's not just a point of compassion. It's a logical decision to reach that. It's an emotional decision to reach that. And that's where it hurt me. It's like, it's not like if I thought it was just a physical act of a weak moment or whatever, but the fact that it was free to take things, to do things with this person that you know that your spouse has been striving and wanting to build that relationship with you again. It's a dagger in the heart.
How did you respond to her? Did you immediately confront her? Or did you sit on it for a bit?
I had to sit on it for about 48 hours for her to come home. And then as soon as she came home, she went and jumped in the shower, and she threw all of her bags on the floor in the bedroom. And while she was in the shower, it wasn't what I wanted to do, but I was like, it's the only way I can prove that she did it, is I basically went in the room and pulled the stuff out of the bags. And from there, you know, the rest of that afternoon and evening was not a fun night. A lot of yelling, a lot of frustrations. And the most frustrating part for me was I could never get her to admit it, but she would never deny it.
What was the first thing you said to her? I'm assuming she comes out of the shower and immediately you say something.
Somewhere along the lines of WTF, you know, it was I know what's going on. I know what you've done. What's going on? You know, be forthcoming. Just be honest with yourself. Tell me what's going on, so I know whether we need to try and immediately go and see a counselor, or we just need to go talk to lawyers. Like, what are we doing here?
Oh, so there was still a part of you that wanted to make it work.
Yes.
Why?
I think that's how much I cared for. It was my heart couldn't let go. My heart wanted to know that there was a chance. If there was a chance, I wasn't going to not take that chance. If there was a little bit of hope, I wanted to chase that little bit of hope to see where we could go. And so we actually sat down. It was about 4 days later, after everything kind of cooled off, routines had kind of gone back in. I got her to sit down and we kind of discussed and said, okay, if we're going to move forward, you know, for me, I'm kind of laying down some rules, like, here's how we're going to operate. Because I knew that she was not in a position where she was going to be readily to move out of the house. I had bought the house before we were married. I knew I would take on all the debt because I have the higher earnings. So she wasn't going to be prepared to move out readily without being forced to. And so I sat her down and I kind of said, you know, if we're going to continue this relationship, we're going to have to work together a lot more than we have been. And we're going to set some strict ground rules on how we operate and how we do things. And the next week, it was great. You know, we were actually talking with each other. We were communicating. It was no more, there wasn't a lot of complaints. There wasn't a lot of frustrations. We get to the next weekend, and that was actually Memorial Day weekend of 2024. Saturday, we get up, and she had some things she wanted to do. I had some things I wanted to do. And I was like, okay, well, what do you need to do around the house before you can leave? And I was like, you know, why don't we just tackle this up together, and we'll go and run our both errands at the same time, and we'll spend the day. And so we're sitting there talking through, waiting on our food after we ordered. And the topic came up about Memorial Day itself, like Sunday and Monday, what are we doing? My brother had invited me to come down to his house on Monday for a cookout. And I told her that, like, I might do that. I might not. I don't know. But in her mind, she heard that I was gone. I was going to be gone all day Monday. And I was like, well, what are you going to do? She's like, I'm going to go on a hike with a friend. I was like, okay, what friend? And it was the guy that she'd been having the affair with.
She thought it was okay to vocalize that. She didn't. If I'm her, I'm saying it's a lady friend. I'm lying. She doesn't even lie.
She wouldn't even say it, but she just kind of looked at me in a way of, you know who it is. And so I was like, well, I guess we're not. I'm like, at that point, I just got really very frustrated, very mad. And I was like, okay, well, we're just going to finish eating and we're going to go home. Like, I'm not doing anything else. And so we basically got home and I looked and I said, you got two options. Either we're done, or you only see him during working hours and you don't talk to him anymore. And one of the most hurtful things I've ever heard was, well, I guess we're done then. And at that point, I just got up and left the house because I didn't know what else to do.
How long did you stay out of the house?
I was gone probably a good 8-10 hours.
What made you finally come back?
I didn't have anywhere else to go, but I waited until I knew she was asleep, till she would have gone to bed, so I wouldn't have to see her, interact with her.
So where do you even go from there? Did you immediately call an attorney? Are you kicking her out? Like, how? I don't even know how you wake up the next day and look at that.
It was awkward as could be. So I tried to get her to sit down at one point in time, and I tried to take a somewhat logical approach to it. And I basically said, all right, if we're done, we can both spend a ton of money on lawyers, or we can come to an amicable decision and divide things. We don't have kids. We don't have anything significant. Like, there's some assets, but there's nothing that big. We can figure out a solution here. And, you know, most of the financial stuff, it was pretty easy to discuss about, but it came down to, of when is she going to move out? And that was when she dropped the bombshell of she wanted a year to move out of the house. And I was, in my mind, I'm going, I think 60 to 90 days is a very gracious amount of time. A year is out of the question. I would have been happy if she'd said, give me 6 months, you know, give me, you know, time to find some place to go, or like whatever. I knew that her family wasn't going to be a great option. So I was like, I understand, but if we're not going to be married, we're not going to live in the same house together forever. Like, that's not an option. That is not how this is going to work. So, you know, I was like, well, you need to go and really think about it and tell me what you need, because a year is not an option. She came back, you know, two weeks later, I finally got her to sit down and she was still at a year. I was like, okay, well, that's not going to work. And then from there, we basically both got our lawyers and It was September before we finally had our first mediation. And at that point in time, she had thought that everything was going to kind of smooth out over time, I guess. She would not really talk to me in the house, and I actively avoided her in the house. And so she realized that, in her words, in our separation mediation, environment in the house become hostile. And I was like, well, yeah, that's what happens when you treat somebody like they don't mean anything, and you act like everything's going to be just fine, and you don't want to accept responsibility and accept what you need to do. Basically decided during that how would everything would be settled, and she would move out in 30 days. And so last October of 2024, she moved out, and I have re-exchanged about 4 texts with her since then, usually about a piece of mail that came in or something that had been automatically charged to one of my credit cards that was like an annual recurring thing. So I'd have to remind her to pull that off because I'm not paying for anything anymore. And that's how I am here today.
Oh, God. Well, I'm so sorry. Watching you recount staring at the wall when you realize what was going on is harrowing. Like, I don't put out videos for these podcasts because it's all anonymous. But, like, I know the audience is just sitting there watching you, hearing the little crack in your voice. And I just know that's devastating. When you stand up in front of your friends and family, you think this is forever. And then to have that moment where it just all gets washed away. I mean, God, I'm really, really sorry to hear that you went through that.
Thank you. I don't wish this process upon anybody. I don't care how bad of a person you are. It's not, no one deserves it. It's ugly as ugly can be. I mean, fortunately, because we didn't have any kids or any, you know, weird, you know, long-term relationship, the divorce proceedings legally were pretty quick. So there wasn't a lot of nasty tactics that could be done there, but just the whole process of it is ugly.
What is the biggest emotion you felt throughout this entire process, from realizing something was wrong to finding out she cheated to getting the divorce?
I mean, it's just an outright sadness. And then it's how do you even go and tell your family and friends that it's over?
How did they react? Were they surprised?
Some of them had their suspicions of what was going on, that their things weren't great. I haven't told everyone all the details. There's a lot of people, family and friends, that don't know all the details, that some of them don't even know she had an affair. But I didn't feel like there was a reason for them to know. There was no need for that dirty laundry to be aired. It was just hey, things didn't work out. We're splitting. It is what it is. Unfortunately, I have a lot of family and friends that are very supportive, and they try and reach out and hang out, but as life is, it's difficult to make that work, especially when a lot of your friends have young kids. So there's been a lot of lonely nights and a lot of lonely times, just because where do you go?
Well, that's a good question, because you mentioned that where you have these really stressful work days and you come home and you want it to be peaceful and you want to feel like you have someone you can talk to when stuff gets hard, not to maybe the extent where you had felt overwhelmed by her stresses. But as a man, like, who do you turn to when you want to talk to somebody about this painful divorce that you're going through?
That is where I have been very, very blessed. Developed a really good relationship with a guy that lives next door. I was fortunate enough that he had retired basically about a year and a half before everything went over and blew up. And so he and I we have what we call our bourbon nights, and we sit and drink bourbon from 8 o'clock until 2 or 3 in the morning. And we just talk about anything and everything. That's something that I think a lot of guys lack in their lives, is another man they can talk to about anything and everything. That's something that every man needs. It's been a lifesaver for me, because if I didn't have somebody like him to talk to, I don't know where I'd be.
Where do you think other men can find those types of relationships? Like, you're very lucky that next door, you know, you got him, just bop over, have a couple of glasses of whiskey. But what would be your advice for the guys listening, or the women who want to recommend things for men in their life? Like, where do they find those good guys?
That's probably the toughest thing to do, because it took me 38 years of life to find that. I've had a lot of friends and a lot of people that I've talked to, but there's not many that I can say I can talk to like I do him. There's actually none. He's it. He's the only one. I don't tell my brother the same things I tell him. There's only one. And I will say this to guys who are struggling, or women who have, you know, boyfriends or husbands that are struggling, just take a moment and try and trust somebody. It's hard, because almost every guy that I know somewhere in their lives they've tried to open up and they've been ridiculed for it, or they've been made fun of, or their what they shared they thought was in confidence gets blasted out to everybody. That happened to me when I was in middle school and high school. So, you know, that's where men are taught to bottle it up. It's unfortunate, but that's the way society tends to work. Some people think it's funny because, like, hey, I'm airing this guy's laundry. They think they're helping because they're sharing out your story, so they'll help it get out there. But most men I know, they just want a close confidant that they can talk to, not a person that's just going to share everything with anybody that comes up. And that's also, you know, an important part with those who are married or whether you are seriously dating somebody, is if a man shares something with you, don't share it with anybody else, girlfriends included. Don't use it against them. As soon as you use anything like that against them, they're going to force that man to bottle up. They won't talk to you anymore, won't share anymore. They're just going to be a very quick responses on things. That's not to say that you can't voice your frustrations with your girlfriends about your man or how they're treating, but don't necessarily reveal everything about that person that you're about, the guy you're seeing or dating or married to. And if he finds out you have, that's going to put a big dent in your relationship. But that's going to break a big thing called trust. And men operate on trust more than anything else.
That's huge and so powerful, because my audience is majority women. And I don't think we hear that a lot. There's a lot of podcasts like mine where it's like relationship advice or dating advice, but there's very little directly from men advice on how to be a good partner, because I don't think a lot of men are vocalizing those things where if you air out something I've told you in confidence, that's the end of it for me. I've never heard anybody vocalize that on a public platform.
That's how every man I've known that I've seen that happen, that is exactly what happened. They bottle at that point. It's not that they won't vocalize with anybody else, but they will not vocalize with you again.
What was the most challenging thing for you to overcome after the end of your relationship, whether it was emotionally or just lifestyle wise?
One of the things I didn't really go into in the relationship story was that I had a number of friends that were couples that I spent a lot of time with before I was dating her. And once I was dating her, obviously we were trying to do couple dates and hangouts. And I found I didn't notice it right away, but I started to, afterwards, I started to see a bigger picture of they had avoided hanging out with us after the first one or two events. And I think it was that they had seen something, or there were some behaviors that they didn't like, or didn't really enjoy being around. And so they stopped spending time. I can't say for one or another that was the exact reasons, but I've had one couple actually admit that to me, and it was an eye opening. So most of my social interactions were with her friends. So when everything was over, I basically had to go and try and rebuild relationship with friends that I had basically 4 years of just not been able to maintain. And that's not an easy thing, especially as a guy. You don't see friends for 4 years. It's like, all right, well, how do I reach out to this person and go, oh, by the way, one, I'm divorced. Two, I got nothing going on. What are you doing? Three, by the way, I forgot you'd had two kids since then. So congratulations. Let me know if you got free time tomorrow, you know, anytime soon. And, you know, inevitably life goes big and busy, and so they don't reach out. You know, how do you manifest a relationship with friends you haven't seen in 4 years that are moving on with their lives?
Just out of curiosity, did that relationship with your ex-wife, did the man that she cheated on you with, did they continue that relationship?
I have no idea.
Really?
I don't even know where she moved to.
Oh, so she doesn't even live in the same city anymore.
No, she does. But when she moved out, I asked her, I said, hey, you know, I just cared. I was like, where are you? You know, I want to know if she's going somewhere safe. But she wouldn't tell me anything.
Wow. So not even through the grapevine, like, oh yeah, by the way, I saw her and so out or whatever. It could have ended for all we know.
Right.
Wow. Maybe it's better not to know. You know, you can kind of put that chapter behind you, work on healing from what has clearly been a very painful experience, understandably. And there's a lot. I mean, like, the rug was pulled out from under you. You have to totally change how you live your life, find new friends, and relearn what it's like to live as a single person, which is very difficult. It's a lot easier to live in a partnership. For those who resonate with your story or know somebody who would resonate with your story, like, what's some advice or just encouragement that you would give anybody that's going through what you went through?
First and foremost, don't give up. You know, don't be afraid to seek professional help, but don't give up. Be willing to be a little bit more open than you're used to around people, just so they have a better understanding of where you're at, because it's difficult when, you know, someone may say something in joking, not realizing that that hurts you because they don't know your story. You know, it's not something that you want to necessarily talk about, but I also found that the more you talk about it, it's almost more therapeutic to a certain point where you can. And that's one of the reasons why I was willing to come on this podcast and talk about it, is there's healing in talking about it. And also it's a reassurance of seeing someone who knows nothing of your story and can see and understand how it affected you and validate your feelings towards it. Because some of it's, you know, you get kind of jaded sometimes about, am I feeling this way correctly? Was I the a-hole? Like, what happened? You know, like, you know, obviously I can guarantee you, I know that there were mistakes I made along the way. But on the larger scale, it feels like I was a little bit more, I wouldn't say faithful, but just more working towards to maintain that. You know, I was more invested in the relationship than she was.
The one thing I've learned from my relationships that have failed, whether it's friendships or romantic relationships, is just because there were imperfections or mistakes on your end doesn't mean that any kind of betrayal is warranted.
Right. Exactly.
And with a drink of bourbon.
Mm-hmm.
Cheers to that. I'll be coming at you with a breakdown bonus episode, talking to a couples therapist about what you should look for when you need to find a couples therapist. Should you go down that route at any point? And also touching on how men can find good community when they need it. I'll see you whenever you decide to tune in next.
What's going on, everyone? It's Bluff here, and we're driving through the states in the Bluffmobile, and the best thing that we can do is play our favorite casino-style games on SpinQuest. They have over 1,000 games, including live dealer, blackjack, and craps, with tons of slots and unlimited options. You can get a $30 coin pack for just $10 for new users. Sign up today. Go to SpinQuest.com right now.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.